Betting on sports can be hard, but hiring Morgan & Morgan is easy. Morgan & Morgan is America's largest injury law firm. They have over 100 offices nationwide and more than 1,000 lawyers. Their fee is free unless they win. For more information, go to forthepeople.com/bestbets or dial pound law, pound 529 from your cell phone. That's forthepeople.com/bestbets. This is a paid advertisement.
The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Tuesday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV. I say it slowly today because I want to let it breathe. I want people to soak in all the ways you can get us. No matter how you get us, we appreciate it. It is a numbers game. It's Gil Alexander. That's right there. Is a 9-1 Q2 Millions Kelly Bidlin.
Let's go, baby.
9-1, ladies and gentlemen, with 3 weeks to go in a 5-week quarter.
What could possibly go wrong, Gil?
Let me repeat that. 9-1. He's the man to beat. What's the prize for the quarter? I don't even check.
I did that stupid thing and actually looked up the standings this morning.
Oh, why'd you do that?
Not even close. Are you kidding? There's like 37 people that are 10-0.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, that's what it was.
You're toast. You're never winning. What's the prize for a quarter in Millions?
Like 150? Something like 150K, something like that?
It's low six figures. Are there really 37 10-0s?
Yeah.
Oh, that's too bad. I didn't even know
where to guess. I was guessing in my head like 20, 15, 20.
But again, it's too early anyway, right? I'm just sort of saying it facetiously.
Of course.
A week from now, maybe one can start thinking about it.
I won't get excited until I'm 4 weeks. Yeah. Into it.
He does that by virtue of the Bills win over the Jets yesterday. We'll talk about that momentarily. On the show today, Drew Dinsick to talk NFL week 6 in the rear view, week 7 coming up, what he's bet already. Will Hill with all his plays. Paul Sporer on the championship series in Major League Baseball, which are now in full swing. See what I did there? With the Yankees up 1-0 on the Guardians. And now the Mets and the Dodgers knotted up at one game apiece. Let's go, Metropolitans. And all you Mets starved fans out there who are looking to get back to the World Series for the first time since the year 2000. And a little fantasy with Todd Wright. How about that today?
That's right.
Todd Wright, the greatest radio host, greatest sports talk radio host there ever was. All night with Todd Wright back at ESPN Radio back in the day. He has his own fantasy podcast. By the way, Todd, who lives in Tampa, we got to ask him about Hurricane Milton and how that went down for him. He's okay. He'll talk fantasy with us today about that game last night, the football game, that is, between the Bills and the Jets. I, too, had the Bills. Listen, guessing lines has done wonderful things. People could say whatever they want, but that exercise works beautifully.
Mm-hmm.
You and I are combined 17-3 this quarter doing it that way. This game last night, if you missed it, let me just start by saying this. This became, I don't want to be prisoner of the moment, but of all officials-driven, unwatchable games, meaning that it was a flag fest, this might have been the worst one I've ever seen.
Yeah, completely agree.
It might have been the worst just sort of intrusion on a football game. Not saying that some of it wasn't justified, but I want to go back to the beginning of this game because there were so many little things. First of all, the Jets are up 3-0. The Bills go on this long drive, 9 plays, 70 yards, where 8 of the runs were for 61 of them. It was Ty Johnson for 12. Then it was Ray Davis out of Kentucky for 3, 14, 6, 5, 15, and 5. Just up the gut, right? The drive was so dominant. And you figured, oh, my God, the Bills are going to do this all night. And then they kind of went away from it the rest of the night. But anyway, Bills went up 7-3. Jets came right back with a long drive of their own. Rodgers to Wilson from 5 out, and that made it 9-7. And then did anybody, like, they didn't make a big enough deal about this. Joe Buck and Troy Aikman. Did everybody just decide that extra point was good? Because that extra point looked completely off to me.
Yes.
And they're like, it's good. I'm like, what?
And
it was not one of those optical illusion ones. Like, it was way off to me.
Yeah, I screwed up later in the game as I was trying to count up all the missed kicks, and I had miscounted that one.
This one they gave deserve line, so it's 10-7 Jets. This is late first quarter. I'm like, how is that good? Later, Buffalo on the strength of a Allen to Ray Davis 42-yard play, they end up with a touchdown. at the end, Mac Hollins from eight out, 10 plays, 90 yards.
Oh, that was that end zone throw from Allen. That was ridiculous.
That was amazing. Yeah. 13-10. They do miss the extra point. Bass could not make it. He was wide on this one. So now the kicking woes, you're already like, okay, that was interesting. Like, that might have been two missed extra points. It's 13-10 Buffalo. Later, Buffalo takes over at their own 20 with 2:49 left. Same score, 2:49 left in the second quarter. They have a double dip opportunity up 13-10. They do, in fact, go 10 plays, 80 yards. Allen to Knox from 12 out on a 3rd-and-11 at the Jets 12. It's 20-10 Buffalo with 21 seconds left in the quarter. And then Rodgers does a Rodgers thing, his fourth career Hail Mary. It's ridiculous. To Lazard from 52 out, 20-17 Buffalo at the half. And you're like, wow. If you're a Buffalo backer, you're like, really? Did that just happen?
Especially, I mean, like, instant takeaway. Like, did you think that was a catch? You know, the way the guys ripped it out at the end, I was like, okay, well, obviously that didn't get caught.
Well, from our angle, it looked like there was a catch, and then there was a delay. There was like a beat before the ball appeared. So I did wonder, I was like, did he catch that? And sure enough, the reverse angle showed that he did.
Yeah.
So 20-17, Buffalo then gets the ball. As we talked about, they would have had a double dip opportunity, but for the Hail Mary. They get a Tyler Bass 47-yard field goal try. That is wide right, because apparently MetLife is now the worst place to ever kick a
right,
field goal.
Yeah. The wind was weird, right? Because the pregame, it was windy. They were talking about the wind, but what cracked me up is it felt like half the time they showed these missed kicks, you know, the flags at the top were just dead. They weren't even moving. So you're like, is there wind? Are they overcompensating for the wind? What's going on here?
Get Lombardi on the phone so he can violently disagree with me about the wind about the wind direction. So anyway, it's still 20-17 because Bass misses that. That was set up by Allen to Samuel for 38, by the way, which is a great play by Josh Allen. Then the Jets three and out, but Epinesa ruled for a body weight call sacking Rodgers, which is just criminal. I mean, they might as well have flags on their bodies at this point. So that extended the drive. Of course, it leads to a Zuerlein field goal, 20-20. That was a 22-yard chip shot. And then after Buffalo three and out, Zuerlein gets it. They get it back in field goal range. Zuerlein 32-yard attempt, no good. Hits the left upright after a would-be touchdown was nullified by a hold. That hit the outside of the upright and bounced wide. This is the last minute of the third quarter. So it's still 20-20. Buffalo's ensuing drive, false start, illegal formation, unsportsmanlike, three and out. Then the Jets get a Zuerlein 43-yard field goal try. That bangs off the left right again, this time off the inside of it this time. That misses, so it's still 20-20. Buffalo gets a chip shot Tyler Bass 22-yarder to make it 23-20 with 3:43 left. And an unsportsmanlike on the Jets ensues after that field goal. But instead of the Bills mortar kicking this to actually force the Jets into bad field goal position, they stupidly just kick it into the end zone. I just don't understand why teams do that. Like, you have the opportunity now with that penalty to do something with that. They don't. Rodgers then gets bailed out on what used to be a tuck rule, but is no longer. That rule went away in 2013, but essentially it looked like he fumbled. It looked like he had completed the throwing motion. But by letter of the law, because his arm was still going forward, even if the ball is jarred loose and even if it goes backwards, it's still an incomplete pass, which again is kind of against the spirit of the game.
Yeah, like it looks silly.
But anyway, Jets sort of get bailed out there again. Then a PI on an uncatchable pass, but there was an uncatchable pass that the Bills got the benefit of a PI on earlier in the game. Then offsetting penalties. Remember, when in the final box score, what's listed as penalties are just the accepted penalties. Mm-hmm. Then it was offsetting penalties, then a hold. Eventually, Rodgers picked deep by Taron Johnson with 1:52 left in the fourth quarter. But the Jets had all three timeouts. But you kind of could predict this. You knew that Josh Allen on a third down was going to have a designed run and win this game for Buffalo. And that's exactly what happened. 23-20. The Buffalo Bills are your winners. 22 penalties total for 204 yards. 11 for 94 for Buffalo. 11 for 110 for the Jets. And we'll have to ask Todd Wright about Ray Davis. But the Bills win. And I just sort of ask you, Kelly, after that game, did you learn anything new about either of these teams? And what I mean by that is the Bills, to me, were always a Josh Allen-driven Superman team.
Yep.
still not a great football team around him, but he is Superman and can win a game for you on his own. And then there's the Jets, who had every opportunity in the world, but their defense isn't nearly as good as we thought it would be.
Yeah, I think the Bills are exactly what you and I expected. Yes, the defense is suffering a little bit, not great right now. I thought Rodgers looked pretty crisp. I thought some of the offense looked a little bit better than it had, but it wasn't enough, wasn't huge. I do have some breaking news for you.
What's that?
That might help for the New York Jets here. It is done. Devontae Adams to the New York Jets.
Wow, just happened.
Just coming across right now.
Wow, there you go.
From Ian Rappaport, this will be a conditional fourth rounder to the Raiders that can become a second rounder based on his performance.
So that's how the Jets save face here. They wanted
That's the win today,
they,
I guess.
Or excuse me, pardon me. That's how the Raiders save face. Pardon me. They wanted a second. They don't get a second by the letter, but if he hits thresholds, they will get themselves a second round draft pick. So Devontae Adams, the transaction that everybody knew was coming at some point, or everyone assumed was coming at some point, now has happened. The Jets get their help on offense. As I was saying before the game last night, it only seems like Aaron Rodgers has chemistry with his former Packer teammate, mm-hmm. Alan Lazard. Now, the most chemistry that he ever had with any receiver in Devontae Adams. Devontae Adams goes to the Jets for a fourth, but conditional. It could be a second round draft pick if Devontae meets some threshold. So there you go, New York Jetropolitans.
This is all coming down right now, Gil. We have conflicting reports. Schefter saying it's a third that can become a second. The point is, it can become a second.
It can become a second. Okay. Little war of Rappaport versus Schefter.
Yeah.
Hope those two work it out. All right. There you go. So, Jets, while you're stewing on that loss last night, you got yourself Devontae. The 2-4 Jets, everybody in the AFC East now looking up at the Bills, who, again, are not a great football team, but certainly have been the best in that division by far. Maybe solely, not solely, but majority of the wise through the strength of the great Josh Allen. Devontae to the Jets. We're coming back with Drew Dinsick next. His reaction right here on A Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Are you the type of player who's 9-1 in Circa Millions and looking to get down $10,000 or more on an NFL line at the best price in the market?
I am the first part.
Or perhaps you're looking to get your in-game play instantly accepted. Introducing SportTrade, the app that's going to change sports betting forever. -104 lines instead of the typical -110. Instant in-game betting and a concierge player service. SportTrade, perfect for those who want a premium betting experience. SportTrade live in New Jersey, Colorado, Iowa, and now Arizona. Coming to Virginia soon. Download SportTrade. Use code VSIN to earn 10% cash back on each wager in your first week. Terms apply. Got to be 21 years or older to play. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call or text 1-800-GAMBLER. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin. He's the 9-1 guy. We get tweets at Beat the Book. Jason H11. The lack of Sigma Derby and Seeger is obviously affecting Kelly in a negative way. No emotion anymore. So sad. Hang in there, Kelly.
You guys, keep tweeting it. Keep tweeting it. You talk it up, Gil. Just keep talking about it.
Oh,
wait for how many emails we get from our bosses about Kelly screaming at the small studio.
This is a very uncalled for tweet from Bruce Dobigan. Did Drew's suicidal fish do the deep dive? Let me repeat that. Did Drew's suicidal fish do the deep dive? This is very rude. His fish were very upset that Drew was out of town. They jumped out of the tank, two of them.
Two of them.
It was Joker and...
I don't remember.
Joker and
another tennis player.
No, but it was Joker and Roger. Djokovic and Roger. Joker and Roger. They jumped out. Rafa's still okay. Drew was very sad about it.
And he had such a good line, too. He was like, the second fish, it was the shortest version of Finding Nemo ever.
Hey-o. Eddie Molitor, always with the quips on the deep dive. And then Brian M. says, Brian Morianen says, the next trades we'll see from the Jets getting Tonyan and Jones from Minnesota and Valdez Scantling from Buffalo. Yes, as Aaron Rodgers tries to remake the old Packers. In New York. That's the joke there anyway. All right, you want to do some awards here?
Yeah, let's do that.
All right, let's get a heat check on some of these NFL awards markets. I'll let you guide us through this.
I am. I feel like I'm forgetting one or two like obnoxious receiver connections in Green Bay, too. and I'm very upset with you about telling me about this Ravens Commanders fan fight.
Okay, let me just explain this. Yeah, so there's a video going around. So after the Ravens Commodores game, which the Ravens, I don't know if you heard this, they won 30-23. There's a Ravens.
How is this not part of the guessing lines recap yesterday?
There's a Ravens fan who just decides to assault any Commodores fan, and he identifies them because they're wearing Commodores uniforms, right?
He like WWE calls them over.
So and he's screaming the whole time. He goes, "I don't lose." Well, buddy, you lost because you're going to jail and you're going to pay big money. I just don't understand what's happened. And I was telling you, like, and I'm a sound 1,000 years old, but I mentioned this to Wishnev. When I growing up at RFK Stadium, best fans in the world, right? And Wishnev, he could say Pittsburgh fans are the greatest. But when there was a fight in the stadium when I was a kid, entire sections would stand and look over at the section in which this was happening because it was such a rarity. This is at RFK. And Todd says, I remember that happening in Pittsburgh too. Entire sections would stand. Now you got some rando outside of a game thinking this is the most important thing in the world and he needs to physically assault people. Like, what's going on here, man?
I don't know. It's gotten way worse, though. That's for sure.
What's happened to this country? Anyway,
I'm trying to think. I mean, the last Dolphins game I was at was probably like 15 years ago, so it's not like it was that recent. But, you'd get fights that break out. It's always like Dolphins fan versus Dolphins fan, of course. Like, they couldn't, like, somehow get in an argument with the Jets fans that were overwhelming in the stadium.
Also, Drew brings it up, and he wasn't joking, right? The violence of, like, this Dodgers fans, and this is, we're talking baseball.
Yeah.
Now. We're talking baseball, right? They just... I mean, there was a Giants.
Not football.
We're talking baseball, right? There's a Giants fan who's paralyzed, right, from years ago from being in the parking lot at Dodgers.
That was terrible.
Like, yep. I just don't understand how we've gotten to this. Anyway, it's a whole other subject. Can we look at some awards markets?
Not a game. Practice.
Not football. Baseball.
Right. MVP Patrick Mahomes, still your short shot, plus 360.
Yeah.
He's really good. Josh Allen, also really good, plus 475.
Please give your commentary on all these guys.
Lamar Jackson, great runner, not quite as good as the top two guys, plus 550. CJ Stroud, maybe going to win a Super Bowl this year, plus 650.
Ladies and gentlemen, you cannot hear this kind of analysis anywhere else.
Jay Daniels, your guy, 11-1 in MVP. What do you currently make of the market, Gil?
I think it's probably accurate.
Yeah.
Again, 50 human beings vote on this. MVP, they do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, if I'm not mistaken. They rank them 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And if you're to believe what Aaron Schatz, our buddy from FTN, who's one of the 50, the way that he votes, he can't vouch for anybody else, but the way that he votes on this is the quarterback award. An offensive player of the year is the depository for everybody else who's not a quarterback who performs the best. So do I think it's currently probably Patrick Mahomes? Yes, and I do think Josh Allen is 1A, and Lamar Jackson is probably 1B on this. And I think that's all true. Do I think that the Jaden Daniels thing is interesting? Yes, because if he were to go crazy from here on out, he's already putting up ridiculous rookie numbers, right, that we've never seen before in some cases. There is a scenario, but it's only a scenario, right? It's only a specific path. It would have to be so unique compared to the others. I still have, you know, I have the Brock Purdy bet at 15-1. To me, that's still interesting.
Because, yeah, you and I both got involved with that. Last week? That was last week when we bet that.
A couple weeks.
Yeah, I was going to say, how are you feeling about that now?
There's so much football to be played.
I know. Yeah, I don't mind the bet. I think it's still around similar number. That's what I'd recommend.
Let's put it this way: there's nothing on this board that jumps off the screen for me.
I think the Daniels and Darnold conversations are interesting though, because I don't. This feels so NBA-ish to me, but like I think Jaden Daniels would have to have a ridiculous season for him to win MVP.
Yes. Because
they're just going to rush to hand him Rookie of the Year.
Correct.
Think it's good enough. And Darnold, it goes to, and I might be jumping ahead on you guys back there, sorry, but like this is the comeback player of the year conversation, right? He doesn't qualify for that award.
He does not.
So if you're looking to bet anything on Sam Darnold, just bet him on MVP. I'm not saying he's going to win. Well, I necessarily think it's a great bet, but I think comeback player of the year is the worst bet you could make.
Man, you got passionate there, that's for sure.
I wasn't yelling loud enough. That's what he told me, Gil.
Well, what Kelly means by the Darnold is not eligible. Darnold is quote-unquote eligible, but he's not eligible by the language of the rule of the award explanation change.
Yes.
Right. Okay. What's the next mark?
Now, do I know for sure that like every voter understands those sort of things? No, I don't.
That's the other question. Are the voters actually going to adhere to that new language?
Yeah.
Some will, some might not. All right. Next, offensive rookie of the year. Jaden Daniels. This is, by the way, the fact that Jaden Daniels is now only minus 195 because Caleb had himself a game here. I still think that's low on Jaden Daniels. Please, I hope Jaden and Caleb both stay healthy the rest of the way and they can have this.
Yeah, this might be fun.
You know, figured out on the field. But right now it's Jaden. And this is the one where Aaron Schatz, using just Aaron Schatz, he's the one voter we had on who said, this would be the one award that if we were giving it out now, he wouldn't even have to do any research or any tape viewing.
Yeah.
It's Jaden's and that's it.
So what was it all of 3 weeks ago, right? We were having the conversation of, you know, could a non-quarterback win rookie of the year? I think you, myself, Chris Felik all said yes at the time. How do you feel about that now? Because I think it is one of those two at the top.
With offensive rookie of the year?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, no. I mean, it's Jaden's. No. There's nothing.
I mean, I know you're really high on him. For me, minus 195 is like back in betting range. Once he soared over minus 200,
It's low at minus 195.
I agree. I mean, there's a long season to go. That's kind of why I just brought up the wide receiver thing. But I mean, the way he is.
He does nothing wrong.
Right, right. And I think last week was one of his most impressive games.
Next.
All right, offensive player of the year, Derrick Henry, down to plus 160. Saquon plus 450, Justin Jefferson 5-1, Jamar Chase plus 950, and then we leaped to 20-1 with CeeDee Lamb.
This is interesting because Nico Collins was on track for this.
Yeah.
And now with the injury, where is Nico? Is he even on there?
I know, I was just looking for him.
He's not on the board even?
60-1.
60-1.
Yep.
Wow. That's more interesting than anything else to me right now. 60-1 for Nico Collins. He's not going to be out forever. So that, I mean, Derrick Henry is, you know, justified. The man's ridiculous. But right now, I would take a flyer on something long in this market.
Yeah.
By the way, the Jaden Daniels, 35-1 here as well. That's add that to the mix.
Mm-hmm. I think I'd either be looking top of the board here or long. I think it's a good chance it's Henry or Barkley that wins this. But.
Well, let's talk about this. Aaron Schatz is one guy with one vote. Let's say the rest of the voters or a majority of the voters don't adhere to his whole thing of, well, offensive player of the year has to be a non-quarterback. If that's the case, Josh Allen at 30-1?
Yeah, no, I like it.
Because can Josh Allen have as good a year as he's having? And if he doesn't win MVP, go award less? That would be kind of a crime.
I mean, I would freak out.
And right now, is Derrick Henry that sexy of an offensive player of the year pick?
I mean, he's been cruising the last few weeks. It's not sexy, though. You're right. It's just doing his job.
How's Puka Nacua doing in this? I missed that.
What is that?
We'll get to more of this. We'll talk baseball on the other side. Will Hill with all his bets next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Basketball season is 1 week away. The old baloncesto. Ready to tip off? VSiN experts have been hard at work tracking the latest player moves to help you bet smarter. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today for as little as $9.99 for your first month and get our all-new NBA betting guide featuring previews and power ratings on all 30 teams, best bets and futures from the VSiN experts, player prop live betting strategies, plus senior NBA analyst JVT's favorite, Title Bets. So much drama in Philly. We got to get Kelly's take on that a little later on. Give yourself an edge this season. Get NBA betting guide. Get the NBA betting guide along with access to all our valuable betting tools across all sports for just $9.99 for your first month at vsin.com/subscribe. That's vsin.com/subscribe. We get tweets at Beating the Book. Always appreciate the feedback. Best listeners in the game. Old crew of ANG. Closet sports guy calls himself the old crew of ANG. He says, he's over at the D. He sent us a picture. He said a picture of Sigma Derby at 8:07 a.m. today. Currently no Bob Seger playing, but they're blasting First Take. Crew in the closet. Miss y'all. I'll miss you too, man. The crew is still in the closet.
Yeah. Yeah. I believe right now.
Keep it
shout
in
out.
Closet.
Matt Hicks, Larry Meir. I don't know who else is over there.
Matt,
Sean,
you know,
maybe.
Larry, you know, McCollum, whenever he's there.
Yeah. I don't know. He had been filling in here. So
Randy Rodriguez, best valet in the biz. Martin Bernstein says he's got the Mets versus the Yankees at 80-1. He's got the Mets NL champ at 75-1. He's got the Mets World Series title at 150-1, and he's a diehard Cubs fan. There you go, Martin Bernstein.
Nice.
And then James Sott said, everyone played the White Sox, though, the same amount of time this year. It was not the unbalanced schedule. You are correct. It was not an unbalanced schedule. Just the individual win-loss records per team. Let's talk some fantasy, ladies and gentlemen. He's the greatest sports talk radio host there ever was. I will not be debated on this subject. I was the host of All Night with Todd Wright back in the day, currently doing a Survivor podcast, the Todd Wright Survivor podcast, and the Todd Wright Fantasy Football podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line, it is Todd Wright. How you doing, Todd?
Good morning, Gil. Good morning, Kelly.
First, before we talk fantasy, you are a resident of the Tampa area. We're glad that you are doing okay. Can you explain to us your whole Hurricane Milton experience?
Worst I've been through, and I've been here most of my life. Childhood, and then went off to college at the University of Miami, came back. Guys, it was awful. I won't spend a lot of time on it, but at the height of the storm here, and I'm fortunate, while I have new challenges every day, more fortunate than some of my neighbors. Just imagine the walls closing in, but beyond that, it's the weather closing in the walls. I mean, that was the intensity of what was going on. At the time, at the height of this, on Wednesday night, we were on. Here's the odd part, Gil. When you're on the north side of a storm like this, it's the majority of the weather. But the odd part is it pushes water away in terms of the bay and some of the surge. So some of that was fortunate, but it was the power of the storm. Obviously, you've all seen what it did to some of our sporting venues in the greater Tampa Bay area. But Gil, Kelly, I don't want to go through this anymore. I think 50 years is enough, and I'm starting to evaluate heading to some higher ground.
Yeah. I mean, how can you not? How can you not have that thought sort of enter your mind? Glad you're okay.
Yeah.
Hope everyone that is near and dear to you is okay as well, and to everybody in that area. Obviously, we hope that you got through it as best as possible. No artful segue, but let's talk some fantasy. The news of the morning, Todd, is that Davante Adams has been traded, as most suspected he would be, to the New York Jets. And so my question to you is twofold, but I'm more interested in the second part of this, which is obviously for Davante Adams owners, is this like the greatest day ever? Or is he a guy that might be past his prime and it's not going to be as great? But the Garrett Wilson impact is also interesting to me. What's your read on that?
I think it's trickled down even to Alan Lazard, who's kind of been a fallback guy that some people have been able to plug and play. He's been out there on waivers. People pick him up and then they may cut him or whatever. So I think Lazard is less of an option now, because Adams, I think, will immediately pay dividends. He was wherever he was going to go, but now he's back with Aaron Rodgers, who's always loyal to certain people around him. We've seen this even in the Randall Cobb days, and we've seen it with Alan Lazard as well. I think it does affect Garrett Wilson a bit. I mean, you're not trading away Garrett Wilson because Adams is there, but Adams will immediately command attention from Rodgers, and he's going to get a lot of red zone looks. So there's a trickle down effect there. So if you stuck this out with Davante Adams, you didn't make a trade trying to get a lot in return. Now, enjoy what you're going to get. It might not happen immediately against the Steelers, but it will happen quickly.
I'm gonna throw some ground balls here at you and see what comes back. Let's talk about guys that could be sell high candidates. Cooper Kupp, his sort of status injured with the Los Angeles Rams. Justin Fields, just from his playing on the field, is he a sell high candidate? Do those names or any others that stick out to you as guys that if you're the owner of, you might think about, well, maybe this is an opportunity for me?
I am fully invested in Cooper Kupp and was this year, drafted him in early rounds, loved what I got in the first game, and then he gets injured in the second game. Look, if he comes back, I mean, predicting another injury is difficult, and I know he's been out a lot of games and recently, but Gil, I'm just plugging him right back in the lineup because the Rams need him. McVay will call his number. Stafford probably feels as good about Kupp as an Aaron Rodgers does throwing to a Davante Adams. So unless you can get a wide receiver one guaranteed return, then no, you just plug Kupp in. Fields is interesting to me, and I've tinkered with this. I've already traded him once this year because he was my backup quarterback to try to get some running back help, but he just sits out there on waivers in a lot of leagues because a lot of leagues don't choose to carry a backup quarterback. To me, Fields right now is the ultimate backup quarterback because it's kind of week to week with him because Russell's just sitting there. If the Steelers hit a losing streak or Fields makes a lot of mistakes in a game that contribute to a losing streak. But to me, he just strikes me as a backup quarterback. If you can get, like I did a few weeks ago, a starting running back in return. But Gil, in fantasy football, it's tough to trade quarterbacks for some reason. You can trade running backs. You can trade wide receivers, but it's tough to trade quarterbacks for whatever reason, because other owners kind of feel they can always get one. They are more available unless you're obviously trying to trade, a Lamar Jackson or a Josh Allen type.
All right, let's continue with some of them. First of all, Anthony Richardson, what do you do with him if you're an owner of him?
Shouldn't have drafted him in the first place. I mean, look, we know the guy is a freak athlete talent, but we've seen the inaccuracy. There's almost an arrogance there against the learning curve. I think from just a wagering standpoint, even this week, I'd feel a lot better. And I did a lot better about the Colts beating the Titans with Flacco than I would with Richardson. I didn't like Richardson coming into the year. I think most people liked him more last year coming out as a rookie. He just took such a punishment. So if you're still sitting on him at this point and you can move him for something great, but I don't really see you playing him. Or if you're just sitting on him, you're kind of waiting to see him grow up overnight. And Gil, in this league, that just doesn't happen.
All right. Rapid fire. Last three questions, two of which are fantasy. One is Survivor. The last two fantasy. Speaking of running backs, Ray Davis of the Bills, Sean Tucker of the Bucks, Isaac Garendo of the Niners, Kamani Vidal of the Chargers. Rank those if they're available in a league, all four of those guys, rank them in terms of your desire to pick them up for me.
You kind of did it. I mean, and Gil, rather than rank, you kind of look at who they're stepping in for and the projections on how long they're going to be out. I'll admit, in one of my leagues, I own James Cook, and I made the wrong call to pick the wrong back who actually started the game for Buffalo, but I wish I had Davis. It's not like the guy who started the game did anything wrong. He just wasn't as good. There wasn't a burst. The coaching staff clearly wanted to get Davis more involved, and he did everything to justify how much he was used in winning that football game. So I think just kind of the way you talked about them, but it reflects on how long you think the guy they're behind is going to be out.
Drake May, pretty serviceable in his first game. Are there any Patriots, Demario Douglas, Kayshawn Boutte, Jalen Polk, anybody worth picking up?
No, I mean, the Patriots all year to me have been Ramondre or no Ramondre. And obviously he's missed a couple of games due to injury, and in two out of three games where he plays, he gets a heavy workload and he's worth playing. But we got to see more of May to see any value in him or any pass catchers.
All right. And then final question, if you're in Survivor, and I believe you still are, Todd, if I'm not mistaken, who's your pick this week?
This is a week, Gil, am I wrong? You can get a little creative with the Jaguars' second week in Jacksonville going against May in his second start. If Flacco starts for the Colts anti-Dolphins, if the Rams get back Cooper Kupp, do we play game theory here, or do we safely go with your Commanders as an anti-Carolina play?
Oh, man, if you got the Commanders, that might be the way to go. Todd, thank you. Appreciate it.
You're welcome, Gil.
Todd Wright, everybody. Coming back with Paul Spohr next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Looking for some action? Our friends at FirstBet have you covered. Sign up today to unlock exclusive promotions, plus watch and wager on hundreds of exciting horse races every day from across the country and around the world. Sign up at FirstBet.com. That's the number one, STBet.com. Use promo code VSiN200 to claim a 20% rebate for your first 60 days, up to $200. Head to firstbet.com today. Skill Alexander, Numbers Game, live from Circa here in downtown Las Vegas. My next guest, I asked him moments ago, why are you wearing that Florida Marlins hat? Because, you know, the Marlins, this just in, they're not alive in the postseason. They weren't even in the postseason at all. And he responded to me, because it's dope. It's Paul Sporer, everybody. Courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. You can follow him on Twitter at Sporer. He writes for Fangraphs and, of course, is the host of the Sleeper and the Bust podcast. What's happening? Joining us from Austin, Texas. Look at that. Florida Marlins. Old school.
I'm telling you, it looks dope. So that's why I had to wear it. You know, obviously bummed about my Tigers, but felt like I had to break the streak of wearing the Tigers hat because you had acknowledged that I'd worn it several episodes in a row because they were still alive in the playoffs. Mm. Heartbreaking loss Saturday, but amazing run. I could not be happier about everything the team did this year.
Yeah, you beat me to it. That was what I was going to ask about. You feel good about it in the end.
Absolutely. Like, yeah. You know, I don't live in the binary when the World Series or the season was bad. And obviously that would not be the case for a team like the Tigers, but even the top end teams like Dodgers or in this, you know, maybe the Orioles fans are maybe feeling some of that. And it's like, I get it. They had another disappointment too, but like, I can't go through what is essentially, first, it's really a year long grind for me. Baseball never stops. But even if you're not on it all year, I can't go through 6-7 months of this to have it come down to one series of five games and then say that it was a failure or a waste of my time and leave angry with it. So I really hope that the fans of the teams that are losing in the playoffs are at least acknowledging that their squad had a great season. Even if they fall short, like a team like the Dodgers, like I said, they have the highest expectation. The Yankees, those fans get angry when they don't win the World Series. But for me, it's just not a binary of World Series or bust. I think that's a stupid way to follow sports, to be honest.
You're a Giannis Antetokounmpo guy.
Absolutely.
Remember that his press conference where he went crazy on the not crazy, and but I, in his own way, went crazy on the report.
And I couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
Again, it's just I hate that sports culture. And I don't think, you know, some people say, oh, it's a loser mentality. No, it's not. If the only one team wins, it just cannot be that all 29 teams did nothing that year and had no positivity. I refuse to live in that world.
It's funny because we had Rufus Peabody, who's a, you know, maybe the most successful better of his sports better mm-hmm. of his generation. We had him on the Megapod, which we're there to talk NFL. But the one sort of fanhood that he holds on to is he loves the Baltimore Orioles. And that last game, he just went crazy on Twitter talking about, you know, the managing of that team. And he's more a believer that it was a managerial failure than it was a front office one. But on the Megapod, we got off on this side tangent about, you know, he is fine with the Orioles not unloading players at the trade deadline to try to, incrementally, and his, you know, he believes it's just sure. an incremental advantage to win a World Series. I grew up an Orioles fan. I find that fascinating. I think it's a fascinating discussion because, you know, that fan base was starved for so, I mean, obviously when we were kids, they were great, but that fan base modern day has been starved. They had some horrible seasons and they tried to do a sort of Houston Astros thing. But Rufus, as a fan, he's kind of like a cousin of what you're saying. He is okay. His whole point was, I just want hope as a fan. Like, he puts hope.
Right, exactly.
He values hope more than actual championships, basically.
It's so hard to win the championship. You have to, right? You want to live in a window. And then, how many rings did you get? And like, it obviously started back with Atlanta when they only got the one during their run. But if you're going to tell me that that's not a successful run because they only got one ring, I think you're kind of an idiot. I'm sorry. I just really do. Like, it cannot just be ring or not. And with the way we've gone. With regards to Baltimore, though, I will say, if you have a deep enough system, I do think you start to look to make those trades.
Yeah, me too.
I wish they'd have gotten a bit of a bigger pitcher at the deadline. And I say that even as a Trevor Rogers guy, I was gassing that move up, saying like, maybe they've got some plans for him the way Houston did for Kikuchi. Obviously it didn't work out, but they've had a couple mediocre deadlines now. They still need, if they're not going to re-sign Burns, they need two pitchers. Even if they re-sign Burns, they still need another to go with them. They still need pitching, but the window is opening and it's very bright in Baltimore.
Yeah. I disagreed with Rufus on it, but I think it's a fascinating disagreement. And he would, by the way, just to be fair to him, he would object with my characterization of, he values hope over World Series. His point is that making those deals does not necessarily increase your chances that dramatically.
And I get that.
Yeah.
Don't burn the future for the now when what you might do in the now with a deadline trade doesn't necessarily help your chances that much.
Yeah.
Right. But I still think going out and getting a Crochet, like paying up for him or somebody on that caliber. The tough part was the best pitcher like freely available that on a fair trade deal was Flaherty. And how are they going to go back to that? Well, I know he was completely different this year than last year, but think about how badly he flopped with them. It'd be kind of hard to bring him back a second deadline, right?
I don't know. You know, on the other hand, it's like someone pointed out, the Rangers traded prospects to get Aroldis Chapman. They probably don't win the World Series without Chapman. Does anybody care that they traded prospects? Right.
Same guy. Right. Gleyber Torres and Cole Reagans.
Yeah.
Both traded for Chapman. Both
that's
those
right.
teams won.
Yeah.
If you win, it doesn't matter. But then if you don't, that's where it becomes tough, though. Right.
Yeah. But
because imagine if they didn't win, they're stuck with Chapman. Well, they don't even have Chapman because now he's in Pittsburgh and they don't have Reagans.
Yeah.
That's where it becomes tough. And you don't know going in that they're going to win. I guarantee you. If they didn't win the World Series, we'd be hailing them for that Reagans move.
Yeah, but the object, and I always say this sort of, you know, joking, as I lean in for this, the object is to win the World Series, right? But
that is true.
It was fascinating to me that he's like, no, I want hope. Hope is why I'm a fan. Hope. I was like, that's pretty interesting. So let's get to tonight's game. You're wearing the Marlins hat, by the way, matching beautifully with the Wiener Dog sweatshirt, which is a tribute to his dog, Charlotte, who has vomited on this very program before. Not due to the content, right. The Marlins, we think. The Marlins are interesting because I just brought up earlier, Cleveland plays New York tonight. Yankees have a 1-0 lead in this series by virtue of their win last night, which was just a wild pitch fest at one point in this game. The Yankees win it 5-2, and they are -175 favorites tonight. It's Gerrit Cole going up against Tanner Bibee in game two tonight in the Bronx. And I did bring up the Marlins-Yankees in 2003, and the reason I did so was because when the Yankees get deep into a postseason, and they often do get when they are in a postseason, they often do get to the championship series at a minimum,
right.
The lines tend to really start to get inflated, right? There is a Yankees curve to this stuff. And as great as Cole was in his last outing, aren't we getting a little too high in this matchup here?
Way too high for this one. And I'm not like a Cole hater at all. I'm quite a big fan of Gerrit Cole. But yeah, I'm looking at this number askance this morning thinking, am I missing something? Did somebody go out? Did Cade Smith, leave the team, their premium reliever? Because they didn't use him yesterday. They used him in every Tigers game, but now he's got a few days off. So you can guarantee that he's pitching. I don't think they used any of Smith, Gattis, Clase. So even if Bibee doesn't come correct, short of him getting crushed, though, like let's say he can go four innings but gets in a little bit of trouble and it's like 2-1 when he leaves, the Cleveland's down. They're going to run out all their relief aces. I really like their chances tonight to tie it up because they have not used their best. Meanwhile, Luke Weaver's almost certainly not available for the Yankees after an inning and 2/3 yesterday. So bullpens is where I'm going to go first in any of these playoff games, especially as a one-off. And I think Cleveland's set up nicely to get the split in New York, just the way the Mets did yesterday in LA.
Yeah, I'm seeing +150 now where I'm looking. That's a bet for me. You got it. I was waiting to see +150. I'm in. I'm in on the Guardians tonight at Yankee Stadium game two. What about game three? The Mets take a 6-0 lead yesterday early against the Dodgers. It holds up. It did get dicey a couple times. Kike had a couple shots at it with runners on base, and he could not cash in. And the Mets hold on for the win. They even up the best of seven NL Championship Series at one game apiece. Tomorrow it is Bueller against Severino. Bueller with a north of 5 ERA.
Of 10, Gil.
What's that? I'm sorry?
North of 10 in the playoffs.
North of 10 in the playoffs. That's right. The Mets are the slightest of favorites. This is virtually a coin flip. It's -108 on the Mets. That seems kind of low, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think Bueller still draws a name. And then I wonder if we see some of what you said with the Yankees, with the Dodgers as well, where the numbers, as we get deeper, they start to get more credit than maybe they deserve, right? Because it's a good team. I respect the Dodgers, but I don't know. I don't know that I see this as really a coin flip. I've got a little edge for the Mets here. I feel pretty good about them going home. They held on. Like you said, it got a little dicey. And you know that's going to happen, right? It was 6-0 after two. You knew there was little chance to keep the Dodgers scoreless throughout. So they made a push, but they used all their best relievers yesterday ahead of the off day. That's the beauty of it. They're going to have it. I would imagine all three of them should at least be available for an inning tomorrow as well. Stanek, Maton, and Edwin Diaz. So I like the setup there. We just can't trust Bueller right now. The thing of it is, if you don't like the Mets for some reason, then it's a stay away, because I cannot confidently put my money on Bueller right now, because he can leave you down 5-0 immediately type vibe. I think the floor is just way too low for somebody like Bueller in these playoffs.
I'm with you. Last question. Adjusted series price on the Guardians down a game, +280. Adjusted series price on the Mets at 1-1, +135. What's the more enticing bet?
Probably the guards, because I feel so good about them tonight. Then, you know, I'm already getting ahead of the potential tie there when that price would come down, probably something similar to the Mets. Obviously, it hinges on them winning tonight and getting home field back. But yeah, I think I would go with the guards there and take that shot. This bullpen doesn't quit, and they've got that sort of offense where they kind of pass the baton. Ramirez is the dude, but then on any other day, it could be anybody, like stupid Lane Thomas.
All right. Paul, appreciate it. Thank you, sir.
Take care, Gil.
College football guessing lines next.